This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor with Professor H.J. Mackinder. Wang Yi, this is the top diplomat, former foreign minister of the People's Republic of China. He has very good English, very good instincts. He is the model of Wolf Warrior. Early in the administration, he castigated the Secretary of State and the National Security Advisor in a meeting in Alaska. He has not improved since. However, after castigating the United States and NATO at the Munich conference, he went to Moscow the night before the Chinese peace plan was brought forward, asking for a ceasefire, for sanctions relief, for negotiations, peace table. However, Wang Yi had much more to say to the president of Russia. Professor, People's Republic of China comes down to one man now, Xi Jinping. What's his point of view? What does he want?
Well, this is a total mystery to everybody, including to the Chinese. But the first thing that Mr. Xi wants is personal power and control and security as the top ruler in China for as long as he likes. It's very clear when we look at his policy decisions that the idea of consistency is very far from his mind. For instance, the whole point of the canceled Blinken visit, which the Chinese had tried very, very hard to set up, was to win the United States over to sort of start pouring money back into China the way we did in the halcyon days of the 1970s and 1980s, when Wall Street was all bullish about China and whatnot. He let the balloon go, and he was so irritated when we shot down the balloon that he lost track of his main concern, or what he thought had been his main concern, which was to restore a connection with the United States. Because, put bluntly, China right now is, they're broke. They're bankrupt. They don't have enough money even to pay communist officials their full salaries. All kinds of people have gone without pay, or it's sort of one-tenth of pay for months. This is because they don't have any money. The entire country is in the red, and they don't have the reserves. There's no way that they could, let's say they're a bit like Russia. I was saying that Russia can't regenerate herself. Well, in China, and most economies are driven by domestic demand. That's about 70% of demand. Even in a small place like the Netherlands or Taiwan, domestic demand is very important to keeping the economy going. In China, they depend almost entirely on selling to foreign countries. Only 40% of demand in China is domestic demand. And that means that if they are cut off from foreign trade and from foreign investment, they cannot lift themselves up by their bootstraps. All they can do is let the economy slide down until it reaches its really worth. And that's what's going on now. They're scared to death because there's mass unemployment. There are lots of young people are unemployed. The old people are protesting because their pensions have been cut drastically. The life in the countryside was intolerable before, and it's much worse now. They are facing a food crisis as well as an energy crisis. There are all sorts of things, and frankly, no communist government can solve those problems without getting rid of communism. But there are ways that you can kind of patch things up and finesse things and keep the car running even though, the clutch doesn't work or something. But Mr. Xi is a convinced socialist in the style of Mao and also of Stalin. And he's modeling himself right now on Stalin, really, between 1936 and 1938. And he's launching, or Mao, in the 40s, he's launching a so-called rectification campaign, which is to say an ideological purge of the whole party, and that's the last thing we need. And this is the environment with which Mr. Wong is working. This is the product he has to sell, and it's a very, very difficult sale. Wong is himself an opportunist. Before he became a new wolf warrior, he was quite a reasonable person, it seems, or he seemed reasonable to Westerners who met him. But it was just a question of which mask he was wearing. And he gave this address in Munich, which was so extravagantly hostile and vulgar and disparaging of the United States, and filled with puffed up claims about China, that when he finished, the audience was just thunderstruck, and they didn't know what to say, because no one had ever given a speech of such rhetorical crudity and intensity about anything in front of these diplomats. I mean, even if the two countries are about to go to war, it's like our Congress, you know, the honorable, I mean, there's still a little bit of politesse, even in Munich. So Wong has been delegated with, he was supposed to talk to Blinken, and he has talked to Blinken. They didn't have any meeting of minds, but Blinken said his piece. Then Wong has gone to Moscow, where he, we don't know what he said, but he was very close physically to Putin, which is unusual. As you said, Putin usually sits at one end of a incredible a table that's as long as a bowling alley. And here's the thing we have to understand, that the Chinese have a plan, or they may have a plan, that we're not talking about, which is they see the confrontation between Russia and the West as being, as opening a pathway for them to leapfrog to world leadership. And it's as follows, that Russia and the West essentially burn up all of their ammunition. They exhaust all of their effort in an impossible attritional war in Ukraine until there's a peace of total exhaustion, and then they're left, you know, about as less vibrant than Germany in 1945. And then at that point, China will appear with what Mr. Xi imagines to be her enormously successful economy, her incredibly successful social system, and all the rest, export that rather as the United States, they would say, did after World War II, and make themselves the leader of the world. This is completely demented, but I would think the fact that the Chinese are thought to have this view cannot be lost on the Russians. So they realize that the Chinese are—it's a kind of the spider and the fly—and they're not quite sure what the Chinese will really do. I think the important point is that if Russia should win, that's bad for China, because China will then be overshadowed. If Russia loses and China's allied to her, then she'll be dragged down in Russia's loss. The officials in China, some economists, drew up a paper about China's interests, and they said, we really need the West. Really need the West. That's the only place where the money is and the know-how and all the rest. And Mr. Xi just scribbled on it, this is all rubbish, and threw it back. So we must not underestimate how unrealistic and irresponsible and ignorant he is. Although I should say those words can be applied to just about everybody in the communist leadership, although he's the most flagrant. I've never heard Chinese people talk as so negatively about a leader, except Mao in retrospect. So what we're seeing is a situation where if China gets involved, which I think she may well do, they're already shipping refrigerators and microwave ovens, which can be dismantled, and you can pull out all kinds of computer chips, which are very useful in weapons. And I think that they feel that they've got America on the back foot, which is quite wrong, and they don't think that we will respond. But in fact, I think that the reaction the United States would have to China, if she were to supply these things, would be just an overwhelming, just a vast cutoff of all kinds of economic relations. And this would be a disaster for a Chinese economy, which is already dropping by, you know, tens of percentages every time we look at it. There's another way of looking at the Chinese-Russian situation as well, which is to say that Russia and China together are weaker. Even when put together, they're weaker than this quite extraordinary coalition that has developed all the way from Korea and Japan to the Philippines, all through India and so forth, and then into Europe, completely unexpected by Russia, which thought they'd be able to divide them. Also unexpected by China, which is stunned that the countries against which she's been aggressing in East Asia in violation of international law and international court decisions are now looking to the United States to serve as a counterbalance against China. It's often said that this is an American-Chinese spat. Using the word spat is a way of minimizing and trivializing what's going on. In fact, what's happening is that a lot of smaller countries that are afraid of China, for good reason, are saying, look, Americans, we'd like to be friends with you, and we're developing our military. We'd like to do it in connection with you, because we know that one of the rules of warfare is that a well-organized coalition will beat a poorly organized, say, the Axis, which didn't even communicate, or a single power. So we're having, if there is escalation as a result of China and Russia, this is going to be escalation by players who are weaker than the coalition that they're escalating against. That is, they're militarily weaker and they're domestically much, much weaker. So it would be a very unwise decision for them to do this, but I think that just as Putin could not resist the temptation to turn Ukraine into a quickie electoral fix, Mr. Xi may not be able to resist the attraction of what he sort of imagines to be the Soviet Union. It's quite extraordinary, the parallels now between his domestic policies and, say, the policies of the Soviet Union back in the glory days of communism. I would point out that the United States is clearly has capabilities that China somehow discounts. You'll notice that whenever, say, Mrs. Pelosi or we had Mr. Gallagher from the committee in the Congress about China, they both made visits to Taiwan. The interesting thing is that they've both flown there on American military aircraft, and the Chinese have not been able to locate these aircraft with all their radar and all the rest. They couldn't see Mrs. Pelosi's plane anywhere. We clearly have an ability just to blind them, but we don't talk about it. However, Mr. Xi is not the sort of person who digests that sort of information. He's at least as erratic as Putin. So to conclude, what I have to say today is that we're in a situation now where if Washington takes decisive action, there's a very good chance that Ukraine will succeed militarily enough to permit the termination of this war and a peace which restores Ukraine to a status that she can accept and that the rest of the world can accept and that will not be in violation of international law. If we try to finesse this and we do not act or we sort of ration weapons or try to manage how the Ukrainians are fighting, then the war is going to expand, I think. It could expand by invading Poland. There's all kinds of ways it could expand. But any expansion of the war is going to be disastrous for all, but not least for Russia.
Professor H.J. McIntyre, International Relations, commenting on Six Capitals, Six Points of View. We begin the second year of the Ukraine War, the Global North War, the World War. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.